Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show focused on freedom tech and Bitcoin discussion. We have a great panel here joining me today. We're going to be talking about Bitcoin developer education. Very excited about it. Hope you guys enjoy it. We have return guest Lisa here, Nifty Nay. How's it going, Nifty?
Hey, it's been great.
Good to have you. We have DPC here. David, how's it going, David?
Hi, how are you?
And David is a, a contributor to the Fediment Open Source Project and works with Fedi. And we have Cody, who's also involved in Fedi and Fediment. How's it going, Cody?
Doing awesome. I'm so excited that we got DPC here, and always great to see you guys. So
yeah, to be clear, freaks, when this was planned, it was me and Nifty, and I just got shotgunned these two great additions, so I'm very excited about it. So where do you guys want to start? I mean, I position this conversation as a overarching Bitcoin dev education, but also BTC++. We have BTC++ coming up in Berlin in October. Where do you guys want to begin?
Maybe we can talk about, like, you know, so this conference has a theme, right? Like Bitcoin plus top themes. It's kind of why I pulled in the Fedi guys, because they're using the tech that we're going to be like featuring. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun just to like hear from them, especially from DPC, like, you know, why Nix? Like, so the conference is about this thing called Nix. Like, why are we talking about Nix? Like, what makes it so cool? I'd love to hear from DPC, like, how he got started on Nix, like, what his Nix story is. And then we can talk about, like, you know, like, why that's so important for, like, I don't know. I'm trying this theme out where, like, you know, Nix is important for Bitcoin self-sovereignty. And maybe we can, like, talk about, like, how deploying software is, like, a self-sovereign act. I don't know. Anyways, those are just kind of, like, where I'm coming from. What do you guys think? What do y'all want to talk about?
I think we can lay the table a little bit, right? Is that so he's not tracking if he's been running these Bitcoin plus events for the last couple, over a year now, right? And every time there's like a theme for it, right? And so the one that's coming up is going to be Nix theme, but all of them are about Bitcoin education. And Nix specifically has this really cool intersection with Bitcoin. So there's the Nix Bitcoin project, and then there's just Nix generally as a build system when you're writing software. And so that's something that, like, for me, about Nix until, like, I got exposed to it through Fediment. And, like, DPC has been, like, huge in terms of, like, moving everything toward Nixifying within Fediment, within Fedi. And just generally speaking, like, there's elements of Bitcoin education about good software and how do you do software best practices. And Nix kind of out of the box, you get all sorts of benefits for it. And so I think DPC, just like if you're saying, right, I think DPC just kind of like going over your story of like how you got involved with Nix, how you're using the prod the different Bitcoin projects that you work on and stuff. I think because DPC, he is like the absolute Yoda of Fediment, like a wizard when it comes to Rust, Nix, like all things DevOps, right? So it's really cool that we can talk to him.
Can I start with the Nix story, kind of my own route?
Yeah, go for it.
I think I've been using Nix for, I don't know, 5-6 years now. It's been a while. Initially, it always kind of appealed to me because I think the core idea is sound. And I generally, in every company I joined, I was always annoyed with the setup process. I guess that's kind of how it started for me, because you join a company, you get a bunch of HR paperwork, you have to fill out those documents, then you get usually thrown some link to some the team's wiki or something, and there's like a app maintained instruction, like, yeah, clone this, and then here is the long list of things that you have to do to get something building. And to me, it would always sound very, very lame that, something like this could just not kind of serious in like how software should operate. And then at this point, I was already aware of Nix, and I started toying with it. And indeed, from the very beginning, it seemed to solve this problem. And that was kind of the core problem that I was aiming at. And then I started playing with Nix OS. And for a couple of years, I was kind of lame user, but I did whatever I needed to done. And then only maybe 2 years ago, I kind of started getting proficient. And I was able to really create things by myself and solve complicated, non-trivial Nix issues kind of and set up things. And then I started tracking FreddyMint a year and a half ago. And it seems like Justin and Eric were using Nix from the beginning. So I started helping them a little with like a PR here when I noticed I have a solution for something. And then eventually I was just like, I'm going to join the team and we can take it to the next level. So now everything in FreddyMint is Nix-based pretty much, yeah.
So Nix is what got you into Freddy, it sounds like. Like it was like your Freddy pill, sort of.
It was, I think FreddyMint is just an awesome idea. And to me, it's like the way to scale. And it so happened that they were using Rust, which I'm also big on. And they were using Nix for building things and Dev Shell. So everything was matching. This is the tech stack I would like to work with. And this is the idea that I would like to succeed. So, yeah.
I feel like you're like highlighting like one of the things that I think is so important for projects that are getting like really great experienced talent like yourself to come like work on the project is like the tech stack has to be right? It's got to be smart and like... Nix, I don't know. I feel like Nix is just like all the people that I know that love Nix and like use it or like tend to be, you know, we talk about 10x devs or just people who are like really good at development. I feel like Nix is kind of like a common thread these days amongst like some of the best devs is particularly in open source. So like, yeah, I feel like, you know, adding Nix to your project is like a great way to get attention from really talented people. It's cool. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised how popular Nix quickly became in Bitcoin community. I think maybe a year ago, I didn't see that many Bitcoin projects using Nix. And since then, it seems like everything nowadays has Nix support or at least nabbing with it. Yeah.
Honestly, I think this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys from the Freddy team on this call is because I kind of think that like the fact that Freddy's using it has been like a big popularization moment for like Nix across Bitcoin. Like, cause okay, like the Bitcoin project has been around since I joined Blockstream in 2018. Like Jonas Nick and Eric Sirian have been working on it for like half decade, but like I only started running it in like February of this year, right? Like I've been in Bitcoin for a long time. I just switched to Nix in February and I'm now using like Nix Bitcoin stuff. So like, I think that like the fact that Freddy, maybe I'm wrong about this. If you guys have other ideas, like, you know, definitely let me know. But I kind of do think that like Freddy's such like a big name in the space and like has a lot of really big talent at it. The fact that you guys are like doing everything on Rust, everything with Nix, it makes people curious, right? Like people are like, oh, maybe I should check this out. Like Freddy's using it. Maybe it's worth looking into.
Yeah, hard to tell. I wonder how much we have an influence on the community.
Cody, what do you think? How did you get interested? How did you find out about Nix, Cody? Like,
we can't hear you.
Yeah, I can't hear you.
Oh.
We, while we're waiting for Cody to troubleshoot, I had a couple of the Nix guys on Scylla Dispatch probably about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. That's episode 42. If you have not listened to it, consider listening to it after this.
So maybe you're the reason everyone got onto Nix, Matt. Like,
yeah, maybe Scylla Dispatch caused it. No. I doubt that, but... I mean, so can we just go real quickly, high level, like, why should, like, the selling point I've heard about Nix is security first. And would you guys agree on that? Like, that's the main value prop there?
I think, I guess the security might be a consequence of reproducibility. I don't know if I guess at the core of Nix is this idea of functional computation. So in programming, a functional code is one that works mostly or purely by taking inputs and producing deterministic outputs. So Nix takes this concept to generalize it to kind of the whole computing, like a building system, calling programs, everything. And because of that, once you get something working with Nix, you're reasonably confident that it will work the same way on every computer, all the time, everywhere, even in the future. And also because of that, once I build something or run something with Nix and you do it, we have some chance that both of us will get the same result, and then we can cross-check each other. So I think that the security comes from this part, that we can both run the same thing and compare, and then we know no one is cheating.
Yep, that makes sense. Cody, did you find your voice? I don't think you did. That's weird. Are you running Nix? You see how cool, by the way, these zaps are that are coming in live through the Nostra stream?
Yeah, that's sick. I love that there's like a message with them too. Should I log in before zapping?
Cody just joined back in. Let's see.
Now can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I think maybe like a kind of walkthrough specifically of what Nix is, because like just like DPC was saying, like when we say Nix, we're referring to a bunch of different things. So like maybe DPC, if you could give like a quick kind of breakdown. So you talked about it in terms of like the reproducible builds, but like when people talk about Nix, right, they're talking about multiple things. You said like there's the functional language, there's the operating system, there's the package manager, all that kind of stuff. So why, when I build something with Nix, do I know that it is built correctly? And why can someone else do that same thing with when I give them like a Nix flake, or just you got a like big overview of like all the different Nix stuff? Because when people say Nix, they're referring to a lot of different stuff.
So the Nix, there's a language Nix, there is a Nix, the package manager, because it also Nix will, as it produces this artifact, it also manages them, can garbage collect them, and can compose them into the whole operating system, which is called Nix OS. So there is a lot on a different kind of levels of abstraction things packed into this one concept of Nix. So when people just say Nix, they need to be more specific sometimes. And what was the other
question? Yeah, so for example, when we say we use Nix in Fediment, like what does that mean?
In Fediment, we're very set on using the Nix development shells that comes with Nix Flakes, which is like a more recent addition and thing that really got me hooked on Nix. So development shell, basically with one command, you will get all the things you need to work on Fediment. Everything pre-configured for you, and I guess to contrast it with kind of legacy solutions, you usually the building systems that we use for software, they assume a lot of things are present in the operating system already. So they will assume you have a compiler, they assume that this compiler will work with whatever you're trying to build, and they will assume you have all the libraries and the headers, some files in other places sometimes as well. So Nix, by being truly functional, and enforces that when you make your create your building system, building recipes, you specify everything. You don't leave any implicit dependencies, and you take into account everything that is needed. And this way, it can pretty much, in theory, sometimes some things might go wrong still, but in practice, it pretty much guarantees that that you will get the same result every time.
Yeah, a useful thing, I'm not sure if it was you or Eric who said it this way, but basically when you write a Nix recipe, basically the way you can think about it is you're describing the system in which your software exists, right? So you're going and you're describing specifically down to like everything that's involved with it. Like, this is what you need in order to run my software. And when you're building that, what you're doing is you're basically like computing it the whole time, and you're creating hashes of all of these things, and you're matching the hashes against what it should be. Right. And so everything that you build using Nix is reproducible deterministic software. And so the same way that NBK has been running like bitcoinbinaries.org, right? Of that, like, you want to have like a reproducible build. If you build your system, if you have your build system be Nix, it will always be real. It will always be deterministic. And so, like, there's that joke of for Docker, right? Where it's like, you know, if it works on your machine, then like we'll ship your machine. Like, one way to think about Nix is that you're describing the machine that the person needs to do. And so when they run your software, they build that machine and then they run it within that machine, if that makes sense. Right. And so that's super important when it comes to Bitcoin stuff. Right. Because I don't want, if like, you know, when I build my software, like, I don't want it to be that I built it in this way and then someone else is running like a different SSL or something like that. And so therefore, like, the address generation that they're doing is invalid or something like that. But if you build it with Nix, then you know absolutely every single time that it will always be correct, right?
Yep.
I have a question. So, like, so one thing that I've been talking about Nix a lot, because I'm trying to tell people about the conference that we're doing in October in Berlin. We're doing a Nix conference 6th and 7th of October. But people always ask me, like, okay, is the reproducibility that you get with Nix builds, like, as good as, like, what they do to, like, you know, there's, like, that whole verification and, like, the signed builds process that, like, Bitcoin Core and Core Lightning go through. Does Nix, like, Nix reproducibility at that same, like, level where you could, like, sign off on the build and be, like, this is exactly the same thing and anyone gets, like, exactly, like, byte for byte the same build result? Or is it, like, a slightly different type of reproducibility?
Well, there is an asterisk there that if you really go out of your way to make it not reproducible, then you can succeed in this goal.
Okay.
But at least from Fedimint, a couple of months ago, I actually added into our CI pipeline a step that builds the final binaries and then outputs their digest, the cryptographic digest, and then I run the same procedure on my local machine, and I compare and I get the same digest, which is a pretty good proof that it is reproducible. More people should do it. I mean, there's going to be a difference between a Mac OS build and a Linux build, but between every Linux that is using Nix, they should be the same. And we didn't do anything special. Like, we didn't have an explicit goal to achieve this result, and it just works by itself. So yeah,
that is so huge. Like, because you know how much like time, energy, and effort like the Core Lightning team spent in making these Docker files to try and make our builds like reproducible, and they're not actually reproducible because we can't pin the dependencies in the Docker file, so to speak. So like there's always this possibility that like the Docker file like image is going to give you the wrong thing at some point in the future. Like we're like we've lost basically like the, you know, being able to check like past builds, etc., like that goes away. Like these builds that we're doing, at least on the Core Lightning using Docker images, like we probably should move over to something like Nix. It gives us a little more certainty, right? Because you can like pin dependencies and like, anyways, that's huge. And the fact that like any Bitcoin, like every Bitcoin project should be having like, be building their projects in ways that you can check the reproducibility and the hashes are signed. Like every single Bitcoin project that touches your money should be doing this. And Yeah, I get so excited that like Nix is like, it's a tool, it's great, it exists, like you can use it, right? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Let me jump in here with left side of the bell curve. Not question, but like a little bit of context. And by the way, like if you're listening to this right now and joining us live, you're awesome. I love the freaks that join the live chat. You guys make this show unique. I know this is probably over the head of a lot of our listeners here, so I'm going to try and bring it back. But also, don't get discouraged. You know, years of bit devs and other technical conversations, you kind of start getting some stuff through osmosis. And it's a good time for me to just remind the freaks that tomorrow we're going to have a full degen conversation on ETFs and Binance and whatnot with Dylan LeClaire. So today is the we're in it for the tech. Tomorrow is the degen conversation, same time as today. So join us for that. So when we're talking about verifying, install files, right? Verifying an app that I want to install. The main way that most people, well, very few people verify their downloads, but when people verify their downloads, they use a GPG key, and they verify that this key has signed this hash. The hash shows, you know, basically this, you know, is unique based on what you put in. The GPG key verifies that the maintainer of the software is shipping it like this is. So you're not when you're verifying that software, you're not verifying that the maintainer isn't malicious. You're verifying that there isn't a man in the middle between where the maintainer releases the file and you download and install the file. Like if David releases a file and it's a signed file and I verify that it's signed, I know that it's what David wanted to send me. Now, I don't know necessarily that David isn't malicious. I just know no one in between switched it out for a malicious file. Now, when we're talking about reproducible builds, the idea of reproducible builds is we have a code base. People that are technical enough are verifying this code base. Then a binary gets released. Then one of these install files gets released. Is the code base that people are looking at the same code base that was used to actually build the file? And then that keeps the maintainer at least a little bit more honest if people are actually watching the code base. And that's where reproducible builds come in. So it's not really an either or. What you want to see is you want to see reproducible builds, and then you also want to see signed releases. And then ideally, you want to see users actually verify those signed releases. And then to throw just another wrench into this whole thing, if you're like downloading it on an iPhone, like iOS or something like that, you're essentially relying on Apple doing that verification process because there's no way for you to do the verification yourself. For the average user, that is actually a very helpful feature because most people's threat models do not include Apple or like the US government coming in and rugging them. So that's a trust trade-off that is made. But when you're talking about financial software, when you're talking about freedom tech, it's important that we cut Apple out of that threat model. We cut Apple out of that trust situation. We cut these centralized third parties out of this trust situation. And that's where you need reproducible builds and signed binaries. Was that a decent overview?
Yeah, I think like the way that like I usually like kind of bringing it back to the real world, it's like supply chain, right? It's kind of like, it's like you're buying like a microphone from the store, right? You want to make sure that the microphone you're buying like doesn't have like, I don't know, spyware on it. It's going to upload all your conversations somewhere else or like expose what, like, I don't know what you're saying. Right. So you want some verification that like what the manufacturer intended for you to get at the end of the supply chain is the real thing. And Nix just really helps with that. It makes it way more accessible for like any project that uses it as like their build system. Yeah, but yeah, that's exactly, you nailed it, Matt. That's exactly what's happening, yeah.
Awesome.
One of the things that's super interesting about Nix, and I think DPC can kind of like go very deep on this in terms of the Nix store. And so just like what Odell was saying is that the thing that you're doing is that you're basically taking a hash of the built software that you have and then comparing that hash to whatever the thing is that the software maintainer signed and just saying, hey, right. when I built this, this is what I got. And when I hash it, this is what I got. And you signed that. And therefore I built the same thing you did. And so what's really cool about Nix is you can actually see this in terms of the store and the build paths for all of this is that you can see that it's doing all these hash checks building the software, right? So all of the dependencies that you're installing in order to run your software, it's doing these hash checks on. So DPC, you want to give like a quick overview of the Nix store and kind of how that's involved with building the deterministic build?
So everything being created as a result of combining some other things will get added to the to a certain location with its with a hash of its inputs. So anything changes coming as an input would change the final name. So I guess you kind of explain most of it. It's just you get this guarantee all along from every step of your building system.
Awesome. Well, let's pull it back a little bit. I mean, we've been talking about Nix. Let's talk about BTC plus a little bit here. Nifty, how many Bitcoin plus events have you done?
I've done 3 in a year. This is going to be number 4 in a little over a year. So we've been speed running the Bitcoin technical conference arena, so to speak. This is our second international conference. So we're an international dev technical conference series. We are really focused on like hackathons, new and exciting, like tech in the Bitcoin space. We really want to shine a light on like kind of all the cool, interesting corners of what's going on in Bitcoin in a technical sense. So every conference that we run has a theme. We pick the Nix theme for this next one because, you know, we want to talk about how important it is to like make build systems that are reproducible, that make Bitcoin software easier for more people to deploy to servers, to get new developers in and running, right? And I think Nix is just such a great open source platform that I think is really like an amazing like platform for Bitcoiners, especially on the dev side. Bitcoin plus is we're really doing a lot of cool stuff with tech things. We also really like doing like hackathons, workshops. So if you're like new, so like, you know, we've got some really great experts that are coming in October. Hopefully we're going to make it a massive opportunity for anyone across the Bitcoin tech ecosystem, people who are like, you know, maybe you're working on setting up a reproducible build for your project and want some pointers. Maybe you've heard about Nix, but you want to get your hands on it in person. Maybe you just want to like form a Nix support group because it's hard to get into. It's difficult. Like it's kind of like I think the learning curve on Nix is honestly really steep. There's a lot of parts to it. I think like, anyway, so yeah, Bitcoin plus, we want builders to come and try new things and learn about stuff from different people. And so the one we're doing in October, it's going to be the 6th and 7th in Berlin. It's right before the Bitcoin Amsterdam conference. So if you're headed over to Amsterdam, come check this one out in Berlin the weekend before. We've got an amazing lineup of people that have been working in Bitcoin and Nix for like years at this point. So I'm really excited about it. And Fedi is sponsoring. So thank you, Fedi, for contributing to help bring, you know, Nix and reproducible builds to like Bitcoin.
So first of all, freaks, that's btc++.dev. And the plus plus is spelled out PLUS. By the way, that's a really annoying domain to shill on audio. Not that you're going to change it now.
We also have btcpp.dev. So it's like.
Okay, fair enough. btcpp.dev, possibly. You can go to that for more information. Nifty, I'm curious. Like, I feel like most of your events are usually the demographic is you're focused on developers that are not necessarily Bitcoin centric already, but they want to get into the Bitcoin space. With this one, it's a little bit different, right? It's almost like you're already a Bitcoin developer, but you want to get into Nix within Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But I think the idea is like, no, you're right. That's 100%. This one's a little different. It's definitely like a different theme. I do want to say though that I think this is a great opportunity if you're a dev and you want to get into Bitcoin. This is a great opportunity to come meet people that are building in this space. Like same with every Bitcoin plus, right? And honestly, like one of the really cool things that Nix does, it does a lot of great things, but I think one of the things that like I really want to bring back to Core Lightning, like Core Lightning desperately needs this, I think, is the ability to let people start developing and building and contributing to Core Lightning like super fast. Like the whole thing with like Nix is if you set up your project with something called like a dev shell or like a Nix shell, it's like a one line command for any like new contributor to instantly like basically get your project building and install all the dependencies that they need to like start making changes to it like immediately. Like I can't tell you how many hours I used to lose when I was like a brand new dev trying to get started on new projects like a decade ago. Like I would like copy paste stuff randomly that I found from Stack Overflow to try to get like the Python thing, whatever, working. And then my machine would be like unusable for anything else, like for like the rest of my life, if that makes sense. Like I'd basically like fuck it over trying to get this one like thing working. And like, so I think like as developers, like especially the longer you're in this space, you forget how hard it is to get like new things running. Like it's not even what you don't even want to be spending time like trying to get stuff running. You want to like be contributing and like learning like the actual like project. Like you want to be contributing to Lightning, or you want to be like adding stuff to Fetty, or you want to be like trying to like, you know, change the project to see like how to like, you know, you want to actually be doing like software work. You don't want to be like being a sysadmin for your own project. And so like one thing I'm really hoping we can get out of this is like lots of new devs that learn how to like get the basic Nix like ecosystem like installed. Like you're gonna have to add it as a package manager to your existing system. And then like all of a sudden, like you can have access. My like hope is after this conference, maybe like a new dev in the space with Nix can have access to building on like almost any Bitcoin project immediately. Like how huge would that be? I think it would just be like so great for like Bitcoin as an ecosystem that we can just get new devs into like any project. And Fetty, I think, is like a huge leader in this, I think. Like I was just talking to one of the guys at this project called Clover, and Fetty set up, because Fetty's done such an amazing job setting up their dev environment with this Nix thing, you can do like a one button in your browser deployment of the Fetty ecosystem and immediately start running and developing like anywhere in the world. Like all you need is a browser, right? And it's literally like one click, and Nix is like the cool glue, like, you know, magic package wizard stuff in the background that makes all of that possible. And so like, I love Bitcoin education. I love getting new people into the space. Like I want it to be just this magic, fast experience for all the new people. So yes, I do hope new devs show up to Bitcoin plus Nix, and we can like get, you know, all these projects that are sending their devs that like are using or building Nix can like have some people that we can just be like, okay, how easy is it for all these newcomers to use this Nix stuff to get on board? Like, is this a good thesis? How can we improve? Like that sort of thing. So yeah, I'm hoping lots of people all across the dev spectrum show up, especially ones that want to get into developing and building on Bitcoin, I think.
That's awesome. I mean, you kind of touched on it, but like, is that an issue that we have? Do we need more devs? Do we not like Bitcoin dev culture? Like, what is, you know, if you go on to Elon's WeChat, people would say like Bitcoin's already won. Like, we don't need developers. We don't need any changes or anything. Like we can just sit on our toes and just stay humble and stack sats and we'll be good. What do you guys see like in the dev ecosystem? Like, where are we hurting? Like what is needed? I know Bitcoin plus, I mean, has been a massive force for good. You kind of came out of nowhere with that, Lisa, and it's been awesome. But like, where do you see the pain points?
I saw DPC shaking his head, so I'm curious what his thoughts are on.
Of course, we need more devs. I mean, always need more devs. Yeah, we need capable kind of technical people to be able to cross check, verify, to understand the proposed changes, to be able to discuss and communicate and educate people that might not be developers. I think there will be never a time when we have too many developers.
Is never enough?
Never enough. Like, but I mean, unless everybody became a Bitcoin developer, then it's never going to be enough. That's my opinion.
I think I feel like everyone who's in Bitcoin should at some point try their hand at paying attention to technical conversations, I think is definitely a first good step. You know, I do Bitcoin +++, but I also run Base 58, which is a technical Bitcoin school. One of the reasons that I think education is so important across Bitcoin is really goes back to self-sovereignty, right? So forget, do we have enough devs? It's do we have enough people that understand the protocol? Do we have enough people that are enabled and empowered with information such that they can participate in technical conversations about what we should do and change to Bitcoin and have good fucking opinions? It's not just so-and-so said that this is bad or I feel I keep running into people on Twitter where they're XYZ, is this? And I'm no, dude, that's not.
Wait, Lisa, are you telling us people have bad fucking opinions on Twitter?
Yes, terrible opinions. Maybe it's different on Noster. Maybe this is my real problem is that I'm not spending enough time on Noster. So I'll take that as a personal improvement plan there. But, it's just I feel okay, you end up with people who think they kind of know how it works, but they never, they haven't actually touched it or experienced it or tried building with it. And so they're using kind of this hearsay of so-and-so, expert driven, they're trying to piece together analogies of what they've heard, et cetera, but they haven't actually touched it or gotten their hands dirty and don't really have a good, from the basics, concrete understanding of how the things are actually put together. So they don't actually understand what they're arguing for or against. Maybe that's if everyone knew how it worked and conversations about what we should do would just be so much easier. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's a little bit of a, preaching my
own. Naive. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe everyone, everyone should come take a Base 58 class. So they understand how they built, work on we do implementations. I'm trying to really make Base 58 about writing implementations, especially at the Bitcoin layer for our Bitcoin Dev Basics class. I don't know. Anyways.
I'm curious. I mean, Cody, you recently had, and I mean, Fetty was heavily involved in supporting this AI hackathon in the heart of Fiat Devland in San Francisco. Where do you see the pain points for a Fiat dev going to Freedom Tech?
I think Nifty did a pretty quick overview of it, but I think it's really important to be to double tap this is that when you use Nix for your development environments for these things, the process of getting Fedimint running, if you're a developer and want to get started working on it, is a single one line command, which is Nix develop. And then when you do that, then it will build out the entire software ecosystem on your local machine, regardless of what that local machine is. You could be running on a Windows machine, be running on Mac, you'd be running on Linux or whatever. It will build out exactly what you need as you need it in order to start working on Fedimint, right? And so that's just a specific one of that. I'm sure people have had this process. I used to run into this process. And I mean, I was running into it yesterday because I wasn't using Nix, but I was trying to set up this thing I've been working on a DigitalOcean box. And it's you need OpenSSL installed. Well, OpenSSL isn't installed. So you need package config. And so you need all these things, right? And then but when you just use Nix for it, is that it's a one line command to get started, to get to the point that you can actually start building software and contributing and working on the open source project. Because there's kind of two different steps for it. And one of them, if you're not using Nix, if you're using something just like a I mean, like, for example, this is like, I think Core Lightning is a great example of it. Nifty is like absolutely correct about Nix is like a huge improvement on that, is that the process of installing Core Lightning on a Mac is like a 15-step process. And it depends on the versions that you're using. And it depends on everything. But you can just do a one-line command of like nixenv-i, like nixpackages.install or whatever Core Lightning. It just builds it as it's supposed to be run. And you can just, once you have that, well, then now I can just either run the software or I can start contributing or whatever, right? And so like that was something that I saw, like, to kind of go back to specifically your question, but just kind of like double tapping on that, if that's important, is that huge barrier in terms of like specific Bitcoin knowledge that you need if you're coming into Bitcoin in order to start getting working on the projects. Like something that I'd never considered, because like, you know, I don't write a lot of Python, right? But like when these guys for like mostly AI devs come in, they all write in Python. They're like, oh, okay, I'm going to try to use Bitcoin in my project. Right? In the pip registry, Bitcoin, the Bitcoin package there, that's the thing that Vitalik wrote. It's still registered under him. It's like the thing that Vitalik wrote in like 2015 or whatever. Right? And so they download this and then they're like, oh, hey, none of this stuff works. And therefore, like, you know, like that's just kind of like something that you want to get out of the way. And so as much as we can do stuff of like building out really good dev tooling, where it's just like either a one line command or just like very simple onboarding flow for, but again, like as an example, this is for someone coming into Fedimint, there's so much that Fedimint touches, right? Where Fedimint, there's like the Rust aspect of it, there's the on-chain aspect of it, there's the eCash, there's the Lightning, there's like all these different things or whatever. It's complicated enough as it is to get started working on Bitcoin as it is. Like, you shouldn't also have this huge thing of the fact that the software development ecosystem for Windows is like not supported and doesn't use a Unix, like a Unix base. Like, should not get in the way of people being contributing. Like, that's just a huge one, for example, right? Is that there's a bunch of people
reducing friction across the board.
Yeah, they show up with a Windows laptop and they want to run something, to which most of the Bitcoin ecosystem says you should like get a Unix computer, right? Like Linux or a Mac.
Is that like a real thing? Are there that many like promising developers that are just in the Windows ecosystem?
I think generally people, I mean, this is like it depends on the level of developer that you're talking about, but there's a lot of people who want to get started doing coding or something like that, right? And they have a Windows computer. And then that's just like one
Lisa's
of the first
pointing
things.
To herself. Lisa, do you still do dev work on Windows?
No, but I started my dev career on a Windows box. Like, I started doing like Android dev on Windows machines back in like, you know, a decade plus now, but like my first coding was all on a Windows platform. I got off of it on a Mac at some point, but yeah, like, yeah. And there's like a lot of early devs, like people that, like, you know, a decade from now might be somewhere totally different, I think, like, are starting on Windows to a large extent, unfortunately, but I think that's true.
And that's like a perfect example of where Nix comes in for this, where it kind of like saves the day of that. So for example, like one of the things that Nifty like did after, when I was working with Nifty on Base 58 stuff, and we did this for the last Bitcoin plus plus, was we use Replit for all of the coding stuff for it. And so Replit uses Nix on the back end and it runs in the browser. And so even if you're running like a Windows computer, or if you're running on like some weird machine or whatever, as long as you have a browser, right? Then you can build the software locally. Well, you build the software and like have it, you be able to access from the browser for it. And so it doesn't matter running Windows, it doesn't matter if you're running it. So for example, to get someone running like a regtest Bitcoin node, like the entire process is just open a new REPL and just write Bitcoin D. And then when you do that, then Replit recognizes that you don't have the binary installed. It installs it using Nix and then runs the binary. And you have the most recent version of Bitcoin D running terminal every single time, right? And so this is something else to kind of cover, because I think there's an element of this that again I think we're really good at for Fedimint, and like DPC definitely jump in here, is that when you use systems like Nix and Rust and stuff where you kind of just out of the box get like all of these benefits in terms of like compile time checks, in terms of reproducible builds and all that kind of stuff, it just like gets away all the foot guns that are involved with doing software development, and you can actually focus on doing software development. Right. So like, I mean, we haven't talked about Rust much for it, right? Cause it's kind of focused on Nix, but like, that's another example of just Rust so popular in Bitcoin. And why is it so good for when you're bringing new people on, they want to start contributing to a project? Well, it's like at compile time, I get all sorts of checks and all sorts of guarantees that I'm not going to get if I use something else. And so I can bring on a new person and they can start contributing to Fediment or something. And like, they're not going to just like be pushing stuff that we don't notice, or pushing something that is going to break something in a way that we didn't see, just because at compile time, we know all sorts of menaces. I don't know, DPC, you want to jump in, maybe talk a little about Rust? Because that's another, like, DPC is another like Rust wizard, along with his expertise with Nix.
I have a lot of thoughts kind of here that I want to expand on what you said already. So you know how companies have studied, I think Amazon has a study that if the website loads like 100 milliseconds longer, that's how much revenue you're going to lose. I forgot the numbers, but just the relation is there. And I think the same thing happens in building an open source community. If your project takes 3 hours to set up, there's going to be a bunch of people that otherwise could contribute that will drop out because they get distracted, they forget about it, something. So you want to smooth everything you can as much as you can, because those things just add up. First, they have to install this, then that. They have to read the documentation. They have to read contributing docs. And in Fediment Dev Shell, this philosophy of streamlining the experience of the developer, we try to push it as much as we can. And it's not only Nix itself, because we, for example, our dev shell will install all the Git hooks that we have. So all the commits will be checked and validated, so they're according to how we want them. So we don't have to tell the new contributor how to do it. They're just going to get a message. Their code will be linted before they push it. So they don't want, like, both maintainers that also use this functionality. And we use SEMGREP to enforce certain kind of architectural rules, so we don't have certain dependencies between certain packages in our project because it violates certain architectural rules and a bunch of other stuff. And thanks to Nix installing all this stuff for you, there is no extra problems caused by those things. We know that this Git check, Git commit check, will run every time for everyone the same, not creating any problems. So we can pile them up as much as we want, and we don't have to worry about it. So yeah, and then you go with a language that enforce. You write your code in such a way to enforce certain things. You write documentation where it should, so all the new contributors can find themselves easier contributing, and also don't waste time of the already ramped up developers asking questions, because unfortunately in reality, to get a new contributor to be somewhat proficient and be able to accomplish something meaningful, you have to invest in them a little bit. And thanks to all this automation, you can actually do it. And then your open source community has higher chance of actually being more distributed, because you can bring more people on board with less effort. So, yeah.
Reducing friction.
It adds up, yeah.
I mean, the reason I bring this up is because, I don't know, it's kind of an ironic situation I find myself in, because I've had many developers come up to me and be like, Matt, like, you're the reason I started contributing in Bitcoin and other open source projects that are tangential to Bitcoin. But like, I can't dev for shit. Like, I can barely read code. I can work myself around Git. But for whatever reason, like, Dispatch, there's a lot of focus on different conversation. That's very technical focused and it's brought a lot of people into the space. Then, of course, we launched OpenSats. You know, Nifty's involved with OpenSats with me. And that's trying to solve the money side of the developer equation. And so constantly what comes up is, you know, obviously I was being a little facetious earlier when I said, do we need more devs? That is a problem that I diagnosed years ago and have been actively working on trying to get more developers in the space. And I think, you know, obviously we want to reduce friction. That makes sense. Obviously with OpenSats, like, we want to get them some kind of comp so they can feel comfortable leaving Google or Facebook or Apple or Twitter or wherever. And those, you know, the good developers over there in fiat land, they're making bank. So like, try and get them something. Like, we can't even, obviously we can't get them equivalent But if we can get them some kind of sustainable pay that they can rely on, then maybe they'd feel more comfortable coming in. But I think there's also, there's a paradigm, like there's something that they have to wrap around in their head in terms of contributing to FOSS versus working in a Silicon Valley environment. And I'm like trying to nail that aspect down, right? It's greater than there just being friction, or it's greater than a like comp issue. There's this just fundamental difference in how you think about your work coming from a Facebook or a Google, and then coming into the FOSS landscape. Like, do you guys see that? Like, is there something there, and is it even solvable, or is it just, you know, they'll come when they're ready?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't see like the next great generations of Bitcoin devs coming out of a FANG company. I see them coming from the plebs. I see them coming from like Bitcoin. Like, I don't think they're fiat mining. I think they're like, you know, like out in whatever, like, you know, like, what am I trying to say? Like,
so they're getting false pilled first, right? They're getting like,
yeah. And like, you know, like base 58, we do get a lot of people coming through but most of the people I think who come through like base 58 stuff are like coming from other open source projects or like other crypto ecosystems, or they're coming from, they're just like Bitcoiners who just like literally just really want to understand what's going on. And like, maybe just by like learning a little bit more about how the protocols work, et cetera, that means that they get to like participate in their conversations with their communities better, or explain to people that they know how things work, et cetera. Like, I don't know. I feel like the type of person who ends up at a FANG company like tends to really like things to be a little more like predictable, and like maybe like open source isn't unpredictable, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just don't really think they're going to come from like large companies.
Yeah. So DPC, you want to walk through just kind of your background and sort of how, cause you've gone the whole gamut. You've been. Yeah.
I was going to say that it's probably hard to have a, non-biased, because everybody just sees what happens around them. So yeah, it's always going to be a little bit personal bias in that. But anyway, about myself, so I moved to US 10 years ago to work at NVIDIA, the startup. I was working remotely from Poland, got acquired at NVIDIA, doing virtualization for cars, basically. And then I worked there for years. I jumped a couple of other startups, non-startups. And eventually I discovered that BitGo is in Palo Alto when I was working at in company in Palo Alto. So it wasn't that big of a kind of lifestyle change. I would commute to the same spot. I worked at BitGo for three or four years. Yeah, and then...
at BitGo?
Yeah, I worked at BitGo.
Were you there when Bitfinex got rugged?
No, I think I joined like right after a couple of months or something.
Convenient.
Well, because they weren't using Next.
I kind of lost the train of thought, but.
You were finished. I think you went from BitGo
Silicon Valley kind of work in this area, and you know, but also at BitGo there was a lot of Bitcoiners, a lot of crypto people, and they're also they have a very specific point of view, and that's why they're there. So it's kind of that's what I also think it's kind of biased.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, would you agree that like BitGo was almost like that seems like a kind of a comfortable transition into. Like FOSS Bitcoin, right? Just like working at a traditional company.
Startup in Palo Alto pays around like the other companies around it. So if you wanted to get into space like I wanted to, it was a pretty comfortable jump. I didn't have to just jump into some very unknown waters. But it's also it's not exactly the same. It is a different path, and you have to consciously, when you're in Silicon Valley, and I have some friends, people I talk, it is kind of more money skewed. Like the prices of housings are crazy. I don't know about kind of now, but you need to make money, and that's just how world operates. And VCs wants to make money, the founders want to make money, the employees want to make money, and then I can see that point of view that Bitcoin being a global community probably should encourage people from a cheaper to live areas to get into it because they're just more competitive, just on like a business level. There's just no way around it. And trying to poach Silicon Valley people might be just harder because a lot of them would have to first move somewhere cheaper, maybe to be competitive on the global market.
Yeah, I mean, David, to answer your question, like housing in that area is a lot more expensive than it was. It continues to go up. So that person doesn't exist. This mythical unicorn guy who's working at Facebook who wants to switch over to Foss, like, doesn't that? I mean, obviously, I'm being extreme, but that's just shouldn't be a focus.
I think one of the things that I didn't really have as much of an appreciation for this is that the quality of the dev tooling at a lot of these companies is extremely high, right? And so like that's kind of like been the big talk in like AI world recently, right? In terms of like it kind of came out what the internals of Google's AI development workflows look like, and they're just spectacular, right? I mean, it's like you can take your test environment and give it to someone else and they can run it exactly the same way. They're not using Nick, they're using like an internal system, but it's the same sort of concept, right? Where it's like you can focus on the software development side. You don't have to like screw around with your dev tooling and all that sort of thing. And so I think like, and like I've seen this too from a lot of people, is that like a lot of the expectation of like, oh, when I get started working on like this open source project or whatever, right? But I'm coming from like a big company that has a whole DevOps team that has all this sort of stuff or whatever, is that like, I should just be able to get this project running, right? Like I shouldn't have to, it shouldn't be like a labor of love for the next 3 hours in order for me to like just get this thing working. And so one of the really cool things about using something like Nix or just like kind of improving the dev tooling around building Bitcoin projects is that when you want to get someone from one of these more established companies or like a more experienced engineer or whatever, then they can just like run the software and they can just get started contributing and immediately jump into it, right? Like, I don't know, maybe DPC Nifty, you guys maybe have different opinions on this, but like, I think that's a, because I don't notice it until I kind of move away from the projects that I currently work on. And just thanks to DP, all the projects I work on are just completely Nixified, right? So, but like, you know, you jump into something like I've been doing a lot of this AI stuff recently. And like, you know, most of them is like Python stuff, right? And so there's a lot of just foot guns associated with doing development there when you're not doing reproducible builds. And so, yeah, I mean, like you guys jump in on that, but like that's something where if we can just make it super easy, then the process of getting them in the world, it's like, then they can start playing with it, then they can start contributing immediately. And there's not this whole onboarding process where like, because for them, right, their time is really valuable. They're getting paid and there's like, they're getting paid a lot. Right. And so to just say, hey, take the next like 48 hours and spend half of that like screwing around with Docker. Right. Like that's probably not the best way to get them introduced to the project.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those, like, if we could like pick a common dev platform, so to speak, like a common way of doing things across as many Bitcoin open source projects as possible, Nix feels like the best and most obvious one for like a lot of reasons, right? Like, you know, if we're going to pick like a state of the art build tool and just kind of like try as much as possible to get as many Bitcoin projects, like you don't have to like make it. It's, I mean, it's cool if like you use it as your primary tool, but you could just have an option to build it with Nix, right? And just make it such as that, like, it's the common thing. And then, you know, people like myself, I know Cody does a lot of like dev outreach, like you're bringing a lot of devs in. If we can just get like a bunch of new devs to just kind of expect and look for and ready for like a Nix like environment, right? Then I think we'll like, my hope is that we'll see like huge returns in terms of like getting all kinds of devs from all kinds of backgrounds. You know, maybe they're from these fancy FANG companies who are used to fancy dev tools. Maybe they're just like new, and we should just like, you know, if we can have the best dev tool experience as possible across Bitcoin, I think it would just be like really great for like the whole ecosystem. Like, I don't see any downsides. Maybe I'm wrong. What are the downsides of Nix, guys? What are we not telling them?
On the practically, I can already mention some. So since usually when you're building software, it expects certain things to be already there. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they are. So it doesn't have to download anything. One thing we've noticed that with Nix, since you're trying to reproduce kind of all, whole world around how to build your software, there will be much more downloads involved, which sometimes people from countries with infrastructure that isn't so great complain about. So then in Fedimint, we have a couple of workarounds for that. So for example, we have kind of a tier of dev shells. If you just want to build a project, default one is good enough. If you want to do cross compilation, there's like an extension that brings more stuff. So you can cross compile to other architectures. And there's another one for WebAssembly for the web stuff. That would be one cause that I can mention right away, very practical. And I don't think there's much that can be done about it, especially in like a more complex project that, like for Fedimint, we bring in so much software just to run all those end-to-end tests with Lightning nodes, Bitcoin D, some other software. It really adds up. Another one, I guess, is the learning curve. It's Nix is not that difficult after you actually get into it, but it's different. And usually the different is what people trips on, because they need to overcome this difference and internalize it. So just learning it, and then the problem is that you need people that understand. Oftentimes someone will want to make a change, but that requires kind of changing the building script. And if it was a Docker, they might be already familiar with it and they would figure out how to do it. And with Nix, they might not know Nix and then they cannot do it. So at Fedimint, I'm particularly focused on helping people when Nix is blocking them, so they don't wait and they don't get discouraged. I wish everyone just spent a couple of weekends practice with Nix, but I know they want to get something done, and it's oftentimes easier to do it for them and give them solution and unblock them than hope they're gonna be investing too much in Nix right away.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and I think DPC, like your kind of philosophy on this is kind of like imbued a lot of like the Fedimint development workflow, is that like when you're building like Bitcoin software, right, is like you're messing with people's money potentially, right? Like this is not something where it's just like you get to throw stuff in and like see if it sticks, right? And so there's a lot of stuff where you want to just have these guarantees at the beginning where it's like you have to do it the right way, right? And so there's an element of like there's an unavoidable element of like if you're going to build reproducible software, like it's going to be harder to do than building non-reproducible software, right? Because like, you know, the non-reproducible software, you just like throw it at the wall and see what sticks, right? Like, you know, if you're deciding to write your code in C, for example, then you're not going to have all of the memory guarantees that you have when you're writing it in Rust, right? And so like when you're writing good C code, then there's like all these checks and stuff that you have to be aware of, that you have to think about, and like those sorts of things where it's like just out of the box, you get these guarantees when you're writing it in Rust where, so it's like, it's going to be slightly harder to get it running the first time, but like when it runs, it will be run correctly. And so there's an element of that for that I don't think is avoidable for it. But I think that if you can just get the net benefit of it is just like, you can focus on that thing and not like, hey, I'm spending the next, I mean, like I literally just ran this into this yesterday, right? Of that, like the node version that I was running in order to run this next thing that I was using, like was slightly off, but there's like no error messages that tell you that that's the reason why. And so you're like, okay, well now I have to install this specific version. It can't be the most recent one, all that kind of stuff. Right. But when you're writing in Nix, then the issue becomes like the actual software itself, not like the build process of getting to the point where you can actually run the software.
I'm still thinking about what other downside Nix has. And
takes up a lot of disk space, all the stuff it downloads.
Downloads and disk space, yes, they tend to add up.
I like to joke that it's like, you know, we only got Nix because of Moore's Law, like expanding, you know, like storage on machines. It wasn't possible before, I don't know. I mean, because Nix has been around for like 15 years at this point. Like,
One thing for all the Nixers that's going to be implemented that I would like to mention is For the local development, set up Nix dev shell for your users, but avoid them having to go through the Nix itself. Mm-hmm. So in Ferryment, we use Nix builds, like the Nix build command for producing the binaries we care about, and that's how we build in CI. But locally, the developers that just want to work with it, they just run the Nix shell, get everything they need. And at that, usually they don't ever have to kind of think about Nix again, unless they run into problems in the CI later with their changes. So just because Nix is great doesn't mean you cannot avoid its pain points during local development, when it kind of doesn't matter all that much. Because, yeah, but then for us, it also adds, because Rust is pretty compute and disk space intensive. So when you compound it with like Nix wanting to make its own sandboxed copy of everything, then you can really go through a lot of gigabytes really quickly.
Someone's asking us in the chat, how much is a lot of terms of space, like for an average dev?
Good question.
It entirely depends on the project you're working on. Mm-hmm. But I would just say whatever your current project requires, and then multiply it by, I don't know, 10. So if you have a project that if you have a project that produces like a gigabyte of output when you're building it, then take into account that you probably need at least 10 gigabytes at all times to be kind of comfortable and not have to worry about disk space. And I think for Ferryment, we're probably, I don't know, in the debug build with all the symbols, maybe at 40 gigabytes even of all the stuff gets produced.
So if anyone's confused about why that's happening, it's like, for example, if my local system, I already have like Rust installed, I already have Bitcoin installed, I already have like a bunch of things, right? Is that when I'm trying to run Ferryment, well, when I'm running Ferryment, what it's going to do is it's going to rebuild the specific versions of those that Ferryment uses and not anything on my local system, right? And so the benefit of that is that I'm building exactly the system that I need in order to run that specific software. Like, the downside of that is that it's not piggybacking on the fact that I already have a bunch of stuff installed locally. And so, like, you know, there's trade-offs associated with it, but like the benefit of it is that the process of getting started and running new software is that it's always just one line of code, right? And what's also nice about this is that disk space just gets like exponentially cheaper. Right. And so, you know, although with the expansion of the UTXO set recently with, I don't know if you guys have been tracking this, so that increased like 30% in the last like 6 months. Right. But that's just generally speaking, that's like a set of trade-offs that I think is worth. And this is also another thing that DeepSea was just talking about in terms of like, you're building all this stuff locally. Something like, for example, that Replit does is that Replit runs a cache of pre-built Nix binaries. Right. And so whenever you need one of those binaries, what it's basically doing is it's hot loading the binary into your local dev environment. And then it's just checking the hash. And then it's using that binary that's been pre-built. Right. And so that's like one way, for example, like that's the one that I'm most familiar with. I think there's some other solutions that you could probably use to improve some stuff, whatever. Right. But like, for example, when you're running, when you're using Nix for running software on Replit, then it's not building everything locally every time. It's using like a shared cache of binaries on there, but every time that you download it, it's checking against the hash for it, right?
Yeah. So caching is kind of a well-understood problem in compute. So there's a lot of things you can do to kind of compact things, merge them together. And since everything is already checksumed, it's very natural to do so. But if you're like, you're a developer in your local machine and that's like your only project you're downloading to, you don't have anything to hash it with. So yeah, I mean, yeah. So just to kind of sum it up, it's not terrible. It's like, most developers working on Ferryment never mentioned problems with disk space, but it is something trade-off that, to be fair, you have to be aware of. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a better problem than the person comes to your project and they try to get started contributing and it takes them 2 hours just slamming their head against the wall and they can't make any progress. This is like you know for a fact when you come, you can just put on the readme, right? Of like, you require 5 gigabytes of disk space or whatever in order to run this project. Like, you know, like that's something. Like, I think, you know,
you require 10x disk space.
Well, 10x relative to
this 10x might be a little confusing because I'm thinking in particular about kind of specifics of how much your project produces. But yeah.
But the point is, they can just download what they need, right? And they're not like smacking their head against the wall. It's like an actual okay. I know what I need to do here, and then they can get it.
You trade this disk space for time you're getting, and it saves time of all the developers, all the newcomers, and all the people that are already working on the project and don't have to help new people figure out how to get it done. And also during just the like, we never have a discussion, so maybe there is something wrong in our CI or something. If it works, it works. It's just the test can sometimes be flaky, but we don't have to chase some weird ephemeral issues of building, not having right library sometimes and things like that. And our builds don't break randomly just because something somewhere changed and stuff like that. So there's a lot of time saved. And it's multiplied by how many people are gonna be interacting with your project.
Awesome. We have a comment, a question from Carlos in the chat asking about existing user developer documentation for Fediment and CLN. He's curious on how you feel about that. I'm curious, like, where does documentation fall into all of this in terms of getting new devs on board?
So with Nix, you don't need that much documentation, at least for onboarding. So our documentation, I think, mostly is, here's the link where that explains how to install Nix if you don't have it already. Run this command, you're ready. Like, and then we have like a just mprox or something that will build everything and make a virtual, like a local federation for you to play with. And you can start working and see logs of all the processes and stuff like that. I really recommend everyone that is kind of a developer to install Fediment and run the just mprox and see how developing software like should work tip top, like how onboarding should be, because it's really rare to see something like that out there.
For documentation, I've been doing some work on this from the Fediment side, so I can talk. There's like different levels of documentation, right? So there's like the documentation, right? So the stuff that like DPC, Eric, Justin, like guys who are working on it continuously, that they need. Also the stuff that someone who is using your project would need. That's like a kind of a different set of documentation. And then there's like a final set of documentation you can kind of think about in terms of like newbies and people coming into the project for the first time. And so like I can talk specifically within Fediment, right? Is that so with like all of Fediment is built in Rust. And so the way that Rust works is that the documentation is actually embedded in the code, right? And so one of the things we're doing is that we're improving that documentation. So that kind of improves for a developer working on the project and a developer coming into the project, right? Have all the documentation. It's right there in the code. It's not like a separate thing, right? And then the other element is someone coming new into the code. And what DPC was saying there is that when you're using Nix as your build system for it, none of the whole step-by-step, like, not to call out Corlay again, but like because I just remember running this issue with Mac, is that like the process stalling Core Lightning on Mac is like 50 or 60 different lines, right? Of that you have to run.
And even then it doesn't work fully. Like our
exactly.
Mac is just terrible. And like, yeah, the figuring out how to get Core Lightning to be like a Nix first experience is like pretty high in my personal wish list.
And it works well. So if you have all the completed binary, right, that works really well for Core Lightning right now, where you can just do Nix environment interactive Nix packages dot Core Lightning, right? And like that just in its one line, right?
Yeah, but the dev environment is the one that I like struggle with, right? Because I want everyone where I want people building on Core Lightning. Like, I don't want people like using it. So we have a lot of work. We have some work to do there. Also, like our reproducible build like setup could use some work. We're constantly like banging against CI problems. I think there's like a lot of things that we could improve across our like process that Nix would just like kind of smooth a lot of edges off. And like DPC has been saying, like I don't want to have to I don't want to have to waste time helping people like figure out how to get Core Lightning built and installed. I don't want to waste time figuring out why our CI isn't working on anyone else's machines. Like, I want things to be reproducible because that's way less work for any of our core maintainers.
So, I mean, it seems like a massive win on the Nick side, documentation-wise, because everyone hates writing documentation, right?
Yeah. So before I forget, since especially with Cody, we have so much adjacents with AI developers, I really want eventually to be able to have a little AI chatbot that learns on our Discord and our code base and all the other things and just answer questions for people. You know, that I think that's a really worthwhile. Is anyone building a startup or looking for a startup idea? I think it's really going to work unless GitHub has it before you're ready with it, because I think that's
how it's going to work. I haven't reviewed the PR for it yet, but it's sitting there right now on Fediment.org. That's exactly what Fediment.org is doing, right? And so for anyone who's not tracking the way that this works, right, is that for chatbots, they're large language models. And basically what you do is you stick a bunch of words in there, and then it predicts what the next words are going to be off of that. And so when you're sticking there, one of the things you can do is that you can search through your documentation to find those words, stick those in, and then it'll answer based off that, right? And so this is called retrieval augmentation, right? And so basically, Fediment.org is going to have this soon, right? There's the PR stuff right now, is that you'll have a little chatbot that you can open on the side, and then you can ask it a question, and it'll look through the documentation, then find the most relevant things to your question, plug those in. You don't really see it where it's being plugged in, but then it'll use that to answer your question, right? And it does the same thing with the Fediment podcast that me, Eric, and Justin and Obi have done, right? And so that's exactly what we're working on for that one. But it's kind of tricky to put it into different places. But anybody using DocuSaurus, this will be a cool one that you can put in for basically anybody within Bitcoin who wants to have a little chatbot that does that.
I'm just gonna write documentation for us.
Yeah, I mean, AI seems like a solid fit here. I mean, relatively low lift. Did you just drop that you have a Fediment podcast with Justin and Obi?
No, the ones that we've done, right? And so this is one of the other things you can podcast. Do. Yeah, so whenever one of us does something or we're talking about Fediment, then you take a transcript of it, right, and then you clean it. And it's actually kind of hard to do, right? Because, and this is why Pablo, he's with his Nostr data vending machines, he's been very into this idea of having specialized transcribers for podcasts. Just because, right, for example, every single time that we say eCash, or every single time that we say Fediment, or if we say something miniscript will always get caught by the most of the transcription models as manuscript, right? And so getting them to actually transcribe properly, running that through and then making sure and doing the cleanup for it is a little bit annoying, but because we're kind of very niche within coin, and so but that's something where that'll be a cool one that you can add to anything. Yeah.
No, the reason I brought it up is because if Justin became a podcaster, I'd have to give him significant shit for it. Was it, Lisa, was it your quote that is you spend enough time in the Bitcoin space and you either become an event planner or a podcaster?
I think that's Rob Ham's. I think it's Rob's. Yeah, but it's a good one.
We don't give him credit for anything on Dispatch, so it's your.
Okay, then yeah, it's definitely me. I'll take that one now. I mean, I'm definitely planning events now, so awkward.
Yeah, I'm doing both planning events and I have multiple podcasts. So that tweet hit me hard when I saw that.
But thanks for inviting us on your podcast.
No, this so we is can great.
And stuff though, yeah.
Guys, this was awesome. To the freaks, I know there wasn't a Dispatch for a month. We had a 1 month break there. Obviously, I was still doing Rabbit Hole Recap and a bunch of other things. But I wanted to take a little break for summer. But we're going to come back swinging. Don't give up on me. I haven't given up on you guys, and there's going to be many more Dispatches. Guys, this conversation has been awesome. Let's wrap it up with some final thoughts. Let's start with Cody. Cody, final thoughts.
I mean, just first off, big thank you to DPC, right? I think DPC, is this the first time that he's on a podcast?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Go. Another virginity in the belt.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, just all three of you guys have been huge for my development as a Bitcoiner and a developer, right? And so just so excited to get to talk to you guys for this stuff. I mean, the big one is for onboarding new devs is that like that's something that it's kind of like it's a little bit of thankless work, right? It's just like not the specific thing that a lot of people want to be doing, but it's just so important. And like all the stuff that we can do to make it easier is like I get people coming up to me who've like done Base 58 stuff, and they're like, hey, like Replit, using Replit was the first time that I was able to code. Like I tried setting up Bitcoin before, but just being able to just run the single like Bitcoin D and just have it running the Redshift node for me was huge. And like I'd been trying to do that locally. One of the things when you go to Bitcoin plus is that because we were using Replit for all of it, it's like normally like the first half of whenever you're doing a technical workshop or whatever is like just the setup process. It's like, hey, everybody install Docker, or like everybody do this thing, right? And then you like just kind of stay in the whole thing of like someone brought a Windows machine or anything like that. And so when you go to Bitcoin plus, because Nifty's using like Nix either for like local builds or using Replit or whatever, right? Is like you actually just go there, you sit down and you start coding, right? Like it's a really, really cool conference. And so anybody who wants to go to that's gonna be cool. And then anybody who wants to like come in and start working on Fedimint is like, we do a lot of stuff for new developer onboarding, just in terms of like documentation, spending time with them. We do like a bunch of weekly calls and stuff like that. And everything that DPC's done in terms of just like cleaning out this build process where you can just in a single command get everything running locally on your machine has been like absolutely huge. And that's the last bit. So thanks.
Thanks, Cody. DPC, final thoughts.
I just want to say that if you're listening to this and you're a developer and you want to see kind of how things can be with onboarding of your projects, just take a look at Fedimint. Just try to set up the dev shell, run our little virtual federation. And ping me if you need anything, any help to replicate it. I really think that's how all software projects should be. Yeah.
Thanks, David. It's been an honor and a privilege to meet you and to have you on the pod. Lisa, final thoughts?
Yeah, come to Bitcoin Plus in Berlin and check out Nix in person.
What are the dates?
Yeah, it's October 6th and 7th. It's going to be at this really sick space in Berlin. We're close to the waterfront. We're going to have this like awesome kind of conference hall that's right next to a coffee shop that takes Bitcoin payments. We're going to have an amazing speaker lineup. I'll be there. I know Cody's coming. Maybe we can talk DPC into coming to hang out for a few days. And we're going to be, you know, getting, there's going to be a third day of the day after. There's an eCash day on Sunday. So if you stick around before heading to Amsterdam or whatever. So it's going to be like a really great weekend of builders. And we're going to get all of Bitcoin to like use Nix and understand it and be able to like set up newcomers so that, you know, Bitcoin will be like the same across, you know, just getting into Bitcoin at like, you know, orange pilling yourself is easy. Well, we're trying to make that easier. This is going to make it easier for any new devs to just start building on Bitcoin. So yeah, come check out what we're doing at Bitcoin Plus. Again, that's btcpp.dev. And then click on the little button that's like the Bitcoin thing. You buy tickets there.
Awesome. Thank you, Lisa. Freaks, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you all, especially those in the live chat, but also those who continue to support Dispatch. Dispatch is 100% listener funded. We rely on your donations, your Bitcoin donations. So thank you for supporting the show. We don't have ads or sponsors like many other shows in the space. We're trying to do it the right way with aligned incentives, where you guys are all, I just want to provide value to you guys and not waste your time. So thank you all for supporting the show. I mean, you guys might have noticed I didn't do boostergrams at the beginning of the show. You can go to SillaDispatch.com to see all the links and all the relevant links. We now have this Noster live stream at SillaDispatch.com/stream where you can send zaps, where you could send Bitcoin live on air and have your message shown. But I'm just going to read these boostergrams real quick from our last dispatch with Russell Okun. We have at 8 Mithrandur with 77,777 sats saying, there are dozens of us, but what we lack numbers, we more than make up for in caliber. Russ is a great example of this. We have at Cum Rocket with 69,420 sats saying, family above all, do the Bitcoin, stay humble, stack sats. We have Eric99 with Stay Humble Stack Sats, 50,000 sats. And we have at Cryosats with 25,000 sats saying powerful interview, natural conversation flow. Great job, Matt and Russ. Was an excellent guest. Stay humble. Look after your family's freaks. That's through Podcasting 2.0. You can use your favorite Podcasting 2.0 app to support the show. Help us climb the charts. Thank you all. This has been great. I have Dylan coming tomorrow, same time. We're going to talk about how he thinks there's a bank run on Binance. I disagree with him, so it should get spicy. And we're going to get all DGen on the ETF talk. But today we were in it for the tech. So thank you for all joining us. And I appreciate all of our great guests. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
Peace. Stay humble, stack sets.